Thank you for joining us for live paranormal radio. From the paranormal to the unexplained, it all happens here.
It all happens here.
Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in our live video chat 24/7 with our live paranormal radio show hosts and other like-minded people. Live. Paranormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by Full Interaction Media. Stop by now and join the fun.
Stop by now and join the fun.
It's Haunted Playground, right here on the Live Paranormal Radio Network. I'm your host, Sheena Metal. I'm a psychic medium. I'm an interfaith minister. I'm a paranormal investigator. I'm a 27-year talk radio host here in Los Angeles. And honored to be part of the Live Paranormal family. I'm at SheenaMetalSpiritual.com, HauntedPlayground.com, and the network is at LiveParanormal.com here and syndicated all over the world, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, Blog Talk Radio, Podbean, Podomatic. There are always some I forget because there are so many. So great to be here and to have moved my shows over to this wonderful syndicated network. Here on Haunted Playground, I gather the folks that I believe to be the brightest and most lovely minds, hearts, and souls in both the paranormal and the spiritual community. And we talk about all things outside of the three dimensions. So whether you want to know if there's life after death, is there a God, or you've got a griffin in your backyard, or you think you saw the Loch Ness Monster in your bathtub, it all belongs right here on Haunted Playground. And my guest today is a wonderfully talented member of both the entertainment community and the paranormal community. I had the pleasure of working with him on a documentary in Joshua Tree, California, a couple of weeks ago. And he is a truly gifted and lovely person. And I'm so excited to have him here on the show. So if you would all do me a big favor and give a nice, warm welcome to not only making his debut on this show, but I've never had him on any of my radio shows in all that time. He's a new person in my life, a new friend, and I'm honored to have him. The wonderful Rick McCullum is here. Hello, my friend. How are you? It's wonderful to have you here.
Oh, I'm doing great. How about you?
I am fantastic, and it's nice to hear your voice and to see that we both survived the crazy desert heat a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun, though. I had a really good time. A lot of nice people there.
Wasn't it? Yeah, isn't that nice? I mean, I think I made a friend with almost everybody that was there that I didn't know already. And I think that, but that's the wonderful thing about, we both come from an entertainment background, right? And that's the wonderful thing about being part on a film set, on a television set, in a play, whatever it is. You always make a good friend.
Yeah, that is true, as long as you're friendly. I mean, I've met a lot of people on the sets that I just wanted to sock them in the throat. They were so standoffish.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, well, some people maybe don't go in for that, but I always go in, I guess because I started in theater, I always go in with this idea that everything's an ensemble, and it's a temporary family, and you should get the most that you can out of it, not only just from an entertainment perspective, but from a spiritual perspective. I mean, we're there to, community is one of the most important things that human beings can do, right, is build community, so I think we should always be doing that.
Oh, I think so, too. I mean, what is the point of being alive if you don't communicate with other people?
I agree. I totally agree. I think it is the basis of everything, of every spiritual sect, of every sociological sect and cultural sect. It is just what it is. But you know, people are different, right? Not everybody's in it for everybody. Some people are just in it for them, and that's okay, but I like to commune and find other people that are in it to like make the whole of the everything better, because that's kind of my thing, you know.
Yeah, that's kind of the way I am too. I have a tendency to try and solve a lot of problems that aren't my problem, but I still get in there and try and help.
Sure. Yeah, good for you. I'm the same way. That's fantastic. So tell me a little bit about you and how you wound up in the paranormal world, and how were you receptive to that? I mean, was that a thing that shocked you? Was it something you've always been interested in? You know what I mean? I mean, it's not, sometimes people join the paranormal world, and sometimes people have the paranormal world thrust upon them.
I was one of the thrust upon them people. When I was 13, my grandfather had died, and we went to Kentucky on a train from Chicago to bury him, and I was 13 at the time. And my mother didn't have actually very much money at all. And because everything had happened so fast, we didn't have hotel reservations or anything. And when we came from the funeral parlor, we walked down the street looking for a hotel. And the first one we came to looked like, you know, they should have filmed Psycho there. I mean, this was a scary looking joint. But we went in, and my mother asked how much the rooms were. And she goes, oh, I can afford that. Can we have a room? And he goes, well, we only have one left. And she goes, oh, okay. And he goes, but I have to tell you, it's haunted. Now, I was 13. You know, I thought I got the golden ticket to Disneyland. And yes, haunted room, sweet. So we go up there, and the place is built like a volleyball court, but sideways with the wooden floor. And on each end of the length of the room, was a rolling bed, and they're about 20 feet apart. It was a big room, and we were tired. We've been traveling, a lot of emotion, and you know, we laid down in our beds. Now, we're completely across the room from each other. In the middle of the night, I heard her scream, and I jerked up and, you know, looked over, and her bed was just, you know, really zooming along towards the middle of the room, and I realized mine was doing the same thing, and the two beds smashed together right in the middle of the room. And we just sat there for like 5 seconds looking at each other. My mother goes, well, I guess that guy downstairs was right. So we tried to debunk it. This was many, wow, many years before anybody ever heard the word debunk it. And we couldn't find out a thing. We rolled glasses to see if the floor was warped. I shoved the thing as hard as it could go, and it'd go about 3 feet. There was no explanation for it.
Wow. Wow. And so how did that, I mean, how did that make you feel? Were you scared? Were you inquisitive? I mean, was it, did you feel like maybe this was your destiny? Like you had all along been meant to be fascinated with this? I mean,
I think that's a really good question. You know, I was fascinated. First off, I was a little shocked, you know, because that's, you know, two beds flying each other and slamming together in the middle of the night is something you don't hear very much of. But after that, I was hooked. I was hooked bad. So I really started getting into it and had a few experiences here and there. But I wrote about a lot of this stuff in a book I wrote. And the next big series of things that happened to me was when I reunited with my dad in Texas. And he lived, the chapter of the book is called The Most Haunted Place in America, and It's Not Even Close. And people who've read the book have called me and said, are you kidding me? I said, no, I'm not kidding you. The people there, they'll tell you exactly the same thing of what happened. So after that, you know, then I went on a quest to find them. You know, instead of them just coming to me, then I decided it was time for me to go out and get a little more involved.
And how did that, I mean, how did you... Were you still skeptical? Were you a complete believer at that point? Was it still sort of a thing that creeped you out a little bit? Because, I mean, you're like a tough guy, right? And you've had a tough, ballsy life in entertainment, doing stunts. And I certainly think people would probably look at you and think this is a guy that isn't scared of anything. But there's something about the paranormal, right, that even when it fascinates us, it still gets inside of us and creeps us out a little bit.
Well, that is true. I'm not really afraid of much because when you go flying off the hood of cars at 20 miles an hour or get thrown off a roof and stuff for a living, you tend not to be afraid of a whole lot of stuff. But when I first day I got to my dad's house, I went down there with a friend. We drove from Chicago all the way to Texas, and I was really tired. And he had to take one of his salesmen back to pick up his car. So my friend Tom said, I'll go with him, right? So I said, where can I go to sleep? And my dad told me this one room. Now, when I went in there, it had a canopy. It was like a ladies' room because of the canopy. And it was a small bedroom, and the moonlight was coming in from the foot of the bed. And I laid down, and I heard, and I'm looking around, I was like, what was that? I'm not scared. I'm just like, what was that? And didn't see anything. And I laid back down again, and I heard it again, right next to my right ear. I heard it again. So I thought, because I'd just gotten there, I said, does he have a dog? So I got up, flipped on the lights, looked under the bed, looked in the closet, no dog. So I sat back down, and just as I sat down, it was even louder. Now I'm starting to get a little creeped out, right? And I look up on the side, right, in the direction where I'd been hearing it was the air vent for the air conditioning. So I thought, oh, it's just the air conditioning turning off. And then I went, no, they don't really turn off three times in a row. So I'm sitting there, and I'm looking out the door. I'm sitting straight up, and right behind my right ear on my neck, and I can't even do it as loud as it happened, but there, but this really hot thing of breath hit me on the neck, and it went, ah! And I jumped out of the bed, grabbed the door, and the door had a slider lock on it, but it was dark over there, and I couldn't, you know, I was trying to get out, and I couldn't find the light switch and stuff, so I just grabbed the handle, and I ripped the frame of the door on the right side where the handle was, ripped the whole frame out, and got out of the house. And I'm standing out in front. My dad lived on a cul-de-sac, and I'm standing on the front lawn, and my dad and my friend pull up. My dad comes walking up the thing, and he looks at me, and he smiles. He goes, he got you, didn't he? And I went, what? And he goes, oh, wow. I said, you know about that? He goes, happens all the time. And that was my introduction to that house. But as far as have I ever been afraid, I think if you went down and saw the door, what was left of the door when I got out of it, you could pretty much say yes on that one.
Sure. Well, I think it's hard not to be. And I think people think once you become an investigator, you fear nothing. But, you know, I always say that as a psychic medium, I talk to the dead all the time, relatives, friends of people that are clients, family. My own mother is with me all the time. But I'm not doing a seance in my house. And I always say I like your ghosts, but I don't want any in my house. And I think people don't think that. They think if we live a paranormal life, that means we just have it swirling around in every aspect of our life, and that's okay with us. But most people, I think, in the community have to set boundaries, right? Otherwise, you bring things home from investigations. You know, you've got something in your car. Like, nobody wants to live like that.
No, and I will tell you, the last story in my book is about something that almost killed me. And I'm not kidding. I'm not over exaggerating. I'm not doing anything like that. And I do believe it was because something attached to me and was showing me how it died until I started saying, okay, if today's the day for me to go, I'm okay with it. And I think that whatever had hold of me just went, what am I doing? And backed off of me because it was like 2 minutes later. I mean, I felt my energy come back into me. My eyes started where I could start seeing again. Actually, my vision started going side to side when I'm sitting in the car looking. And then, you know, the iris where the, you know, that closes on itself? You know, like they used to do at the end of the old movies, that was the end. Whoop. My eyes did that, and then all my energy just shot out of me. And I was like, this is it. I'm done. And, you know, what's funny is when you get to that point, and I'm not trying to be melodramatic at all, but when you get to that point and you know this is what's happening, it's not scary at all. It really wasn't. I was very peaceful about the whole thing. Figured out, well, okay, this is it. Matter of fact, what I actually said out loud was, you know, I've got to do a lot of things other people haven't. I've got to see a lot of things that other people won't. And if today's my day, I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
And right then, bam.
I had a near. Yep. And then it left. Then it left.
Yeah, it's actually a fascinating story. I've never heard anything. By the way, just to tell you something, and I'm not trying to sell a book here, one of the things I did in the book, because I really think it's important when you're retelling stories of the paranormal, that if there's somebody else there, let them tell their version of what happened. So anytime there was something that was hellacious, that, you know, when the poop hit the fan, and somebody else was there, I let them have their say what they thought was going on. So it's not just me, you know, writing stories, because, you know, anybody can write down anything they want if there's no, you know, backup to it. So
yeah,
I did that throughout the book where there's other people saw what happened. And I think people really liked it because it won the Paranormal Awards Book of the Year. So pretty proud of
that. Fantastic. Really quick, while you're talking, pitch it so people know how to get it.
Oh, it's on Barnes & Noble, and it's probably a little easier to get off of Amazon. It's called Ghosts Believe in Me by Rick McCullum. And
I love that. I love that.
I have to tell you why I came up with Ghosts Believe in Me. That's not to be a self-aggrandizing thing. I was on a radio show, and the guy, you know, I just came on, and it's all paranormal show. And he says to me, he's a real jerk. He goes, tell me the truth. You don't really believe in ghosts, do you? So I thought to myself, okay, you want to play games? How about this? No, I don't believe in ghosts at all. I thought, okay, there goes your show, you smart ass. Right. And the guy goes, what?
Right.
And he goes like this. He goes, what? I said, no, ghosts believe in me. Right. And then people heard it, and I started getting all these emails and things on Facebook saying, how cool, ghosts believe in me. So I thought, all right, that's what I have to call it. So, but
yeah,
it's very
interesting. Thing, right, about, it's an interesting thing about skeptics, right, Rick, is that just because they don't believe something doesn't mean it doesn't exist in the world.
Well, that's
and,
true.
And, you know,
I have
this joke, very similar joke with my best friend's son, because he doesn't believe in Bigfoot. That's his big thing. There's no Bigfoot. Very intelligent guy, very not into Bigfoot. And I always laugh and I say, but Daryl, Bigfoot believes in you. So, yeah, it's true, right? Just because you don't believe in something doesn't mean it doesn't exist. But I think for a lot of folks, especially with things that are unknown, uncharted, the paranormal, the spiritual, it's fear, right? There is a fear. I think for those folks, it's hard enough to navigate and control, and I put that in finger quotes because we don't really control anything in this life, things in the three-dimensional world. To start to think about what could be living beyond the three-dimensional world, it's just crazy. It's just too much.
Yeah. Well, there are people that are skeptics out of self-defense.
Sure.
You know, they just don't want to know anything. If a ghost picked them up, spun them around, and body slammed them, they would say it was a little tornado inside a building. You know,
yes,
they just,
exactly,
no
right.
matter what happens to them, they will not believe it. And one of the things that I always tell people, I say, look, there could be five of us, and one person see a spirit right in front of us. We'll all be looking the same way, and four of us won't. That doesn't mean that the person who saw it isn't telling the truth, right? And it's the same thing
right.
with skeptics. I mean, you know, I'll tell, you know, people, hey, I just saw this, and they'll say, I didn't see anything. I say, well, you weren't supposed to. I truly believe that spirits show themselves to who they actually connect with. I tell people all the time.
I agree.
I tell people all the time that when I really started getting evidence is when I stopped ghost hunting and actually just started going in and being friendly and communicating. And as soon as I did that, things changed. Matter of fact, I'm wearing a T-shirt right now. I have a T-shirt on right now. On the back, it says something that I said on a show, and somebody made a thing for me, so I made a T-shirt out of it. It said, many years ago, I went ghost hunting to find spirits, and then magic happened. I found mine. And I truly believe that's how ghost hunting is. If your spirit is inviting, you'll get more action. And that's just the way I look at it. And so when I go in, I just try and be as nice and as polite as I can.
Absolutely. And also listening, right? It's important to listen. I see a lot of times in investigations, Rick, investigators who they have their set of questions. Like, I don't even have a set of questions for this, because if I made a rigid set of questions for today, I might miss some magic thing you were going to say. But they go into a place, a location, and they have this they need to get these answers. And they're always usually very three-dimensionally based answers, right? What gender are you? How old are you? When were you born? When did you die? Well, okay, those are all great, except two things. First of all, spirits answer and tell you what they want to tell you, not what you want to hear from them. And the second thing is that in the beyond, right at home, in the five-dimensional realm, space and time and things like when were you born and what gender are you, I mean, they don't even care about that anymore. So to go and expect all these weird, like you're interrogating a suspect on Law and Order, you know what I mean, and expect these very concrete answers, and then become very skeptical when they don't happen. Instead of just opening your ears and starting a conversation and seeing what they have to share with you and what they want to show you. You know, it is about them. It's not about you when you go into a location.
Well, that's exactly it. I was doing a thing with Dark Zone TV, and we were at the L.A. Mm-hmm. Police Museum. And when we were there, the other guests had been there the first 2 days, and I came in on the third day. And I had let them use my equipment because some of theirs had gone missing and actually some of it melted in a storage locker. But when I got there, we went downstairs, okay, and I took my K2 meter out, which I have incredible luck with, you know, of communicating. And one of the reasons I do is because I explain what the heck it is in the first place. People go in and expect spirits to know what a K2 meter is and how it works. It's the most ridiculous thing I can think of. I always go in there and say, look, here, this is a meter. And look, when I press the button, it's going to light up all these lights. You can do that. And the way you can do it is all you have to do is come close to it, and it'll light up. The closer you come, the more lights. And that's how we can communicate. I'll ask you yes or no answers. If it's yes, you just come and make the lights go. And, you know, if it's not, just stay there, and I'll come up with other questions. So we went downstairs, and all these other people were from TV shows, and they said, hey, we tried those all through this place, and we didn't get a single blip in 2 days. So I did my usual stick of explaining, and I said, is there anybody down here that would like to communicate with me? And it went off, all five lights, bam. And they looked at me, and they're like, what? And they said, well, maybe it's some interference. I said, okay, let me go over here in the corner where there's nothing but the corner and do the same thing. And I said, are you still with me? Bam, five lights. And they're like, and somebody said, how did you do that? I said, I didn't. They did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because they felt a friendly energy to engage with and not like they were being interrogated. And for God's sakes, don't go into a location confrontational and start yelling at people and telling spirits, I'm going to kick your ass. And I mean, I don't even know why anyone thinks that's a good idea. But
I don't either.
I always say, how would you feel if you walked into somebody's home or someone walked into your home and started screaming things at you, telling you they were going to kick your butt? I mean, you just say, get out. And that's what they do. But instead of telling you to get out, well, sometimes they do. Sometimes they throw something or tell you to get out. Sometimes they go away. They're like, well, this is someplace I don't want to be. And they disappear into the ethers.
Well, you know what I tell people? If you want a ghost hunt, there's only one way to really approach it that will work, if there is something around. Because, you know, a lot of times you go to places and there's no spirits available to talk to you. But I always say you should always approach ghost hunting like you went outside in the back field and there was a puppy out in the field. I said, if you run after the puppy's going to run away. But if you stand there and not politely talk to him and stuff until he comes closer and you put your hand down and let him smell your hand and realize you're not a threat, then he'll play with you. And it's the same with the spirits. You know, they have to feel comfortable around you or they're not going to come out. And, you know, I told one person they started, provoking, and I just said, don't do that around me. And they said, why not? I said, because I don't like it.
Yeah.
I said, you'll just close this place up faster, you know, than you can imagine. And now I've come across some grumpy spirits. I got shoved down the stairs in San Diego. I got slapped in the back of the head in Balgoni Castle in Scotland. You know, I've had a few, I got attached by two spirits in Pioneer Saloon. God, that was not fun. So, there is a flip side. But I really don't think the two spirits that attached to me meant me any harm. Pushed me down the stairs, the one that slapped me in the head was more just a heads up. You know, like NCIS, Gibbs on NCIS, you know, quit being such a knucklehead.
Yeah.
Give me a swat.
Yeah, but I've had aggressive stuff. I've had them rip my clothes, scratch me, make me feel like I was having a heart attack, probably trying to show me they were. I had one in a haunted restaurant in Texas, in Denton, Texas. It just felt like I was being shot in the arm over and over again. Like suddenly I just had this pain in my shoulder, and I was doing the psychic gallery, and we were all standing up in front of the people. I literally had to excuse myself and go to the bathroom and, you know, pulled my shirt back expecting to see something on my shoulder, and there was like a reddish mark, but I mean, I expected to see something that was seeping or gaping. Then I found out somebody got shot in the arm there. So, you know, that kind of stuff does happen. Mostly, like you said, they're trying to show you what happened to them. But sometimes
I've run across very few spirits that had ill intent, except for one place, which was, well, there's a couple places I've mentioned, was Bolton Abbey in Yorkshire, England. Now, that place was so haunted and so haunted by bad spirits that it was really something. That's actually a story in the book, and it's kind of long and involved, so I won't get into it. But one of the parts of it is that if any of the spirits didn't want you to leave, you couldn't go through this gate. And one of the girls that was with us had a necklace and a cross, and the cross had been blessed by the Vatican. Well, she starts walking through the thing, and I was walking behind her, and I saw the necklace just yank backwards and give her a big burn on her neck, right? And that's when she told me that if they don't want you to leave, they won't let you go. So I said, well, you know, you're stronger than they are. You can get out. So she womaned up and made it through there. The next girl had actually been a soldier. She goes, wow, I can feel it doesn't want me to leave either. And I said, well, just muscle through it. She did. So then I got up there, and obviously it had no interest in me staying because I just walked right through. So, but there are some things that take some deep thinking on to say, what in the world was that?
And that's okay. I mean, you kind of have to roll with the punches when you're an investigator, right? You can't be too precious with yourself because you never know what's going to happen. But you can't also be so guarded. If you're so guarded, they're not going to come and talk to you. I mean, you're just going to be with no one's going to contact you, and then you just get disappointed.
Well, let's put it this way. It's just like going into a nightclub by yourself. If you go in and you got a stern look on your face and, you know, your body language is, don't mess with me, you're going home alone. You know, it's that simple.
Yeah.
You know, nobody's going to talk to you, you know. So,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
I just try and be friendly as I can be.
Now, do you do something to protect yourself? Because I believe that protection is very important. And, you know.
My answer might surprise you. No, I don't, and there's a reason.
Okay.
And the reason is I know for a fact that I'm not alone. And I know for a fact that who is here with me will do some pretty good protection if it happens to be something really nasty. Because I actually had my guardian angel.
Can you explain that?
Yeah, I actually had my guardian angel save my life, and there is no question about it. That story, once again, is in the book. My dad and my stepmother and I, we all had a business. They ran it all the time, and then it was exhibit shows, and then I would go help run the shows and things. Well, my dad and stepmother wanted to go to Australia for a month, and I had no movies or anything set up, so I drove back to Tennessee to watch the business and the house for them. And while I was back there, I was going to sell my 280Z because it had gotten stolen. I had bought a new car, and then they found it. So, and since it was titled in Tennessee, I figured I'd drive it back and sell it there. So I put an ad in the paper. Yeah, I put an ad in the paper, and I had a couple people that were really interested who were going to come by the next day. And I thought to myself, I said, you know what? I'm going to change the oil for them, right? So I jacked up the front end of the car. Now, 280ZXs are pretty low-slung sports cars. And I got my little bucket out, you know, to slide into there for the oil, and I had my ratchet to pop the oil plug. And I crawled under. It was like 11:30 at night. My dad lived in a pretty upscale neighborhood, so there wasn't, you know, hardly any noise ever. But we had four dogs. You know, we had two Dobermans, a terrier, and a Chihuahua. And those things were like, you know, bugs didn't get in the house without them knowing it. But I crawled under the car, and I'm trying to get off, you know, get the plug off so the oil will drain, and it's not coming off, and I'm starting to get a little cranky-pated, as they say. And I started to give it a really good pull, and I heard a voice say to me, let it go. And I was like, okay. I was like, what was that? And I crawled out from under the car, And I knew there was nobody in the house. I still went in, and the dogs were laying there. You know, they're looking like, what's up, dude, right? So I knew there was nobody up there. So I went outside. I went downstairs, opened the garage, looked outside, because sometimes people would walk their dogs up. My dad lived up on a hill. But I looked up and down the thing, and it's, you know, a couple hundred yards each way. There's nobody out. So I closed the door, and I said, all right, I'm getting this son of a gun off. And I crawled under there, and I put the thing on there, you know, the ratchet on again, and I heard very loud and very authoritative. It went, let it go. And I went, all right, something's up. And I, you know, I'm shimmying out on my back because it's low slung. And just as I went by, and as God is my witness, the car fell off the jack. And it actually was so close to me that I felt the side of the car go through the top of my hair. And I sat up like, you know, cross-legged, sat on the floor for about a half an hour, just shaking like a leaf. But there is no doubt something went out of its way to keep me from pulling that bolt and having that car fall on me.
Absolutely.
So,
absolutely. Yeah. And it's so important that we listen, right? It is so important that when that voice comes, you listen to that voice and get out because,
you know,
After
you, please.
Because it's that voice is there for a reason. You know, I always tell the story that in 2013 I went to host the Mid-South Paranormal Convention, and my last day there after the convention was over, I was going to go out to Waverly Hills Sanatorium. I was in Louisville, and because my mom grew up in Louisville, and the folks who own the Waverly have her same last name. And she was adopted, and that's her birth name. And I don't know a lot about my birth family, and that's part of why I was there in Louisville. And the night before, I woke up in the hotel about 3 o'clock in the morning, and there was this giant black figure standing at the end of the bed. And it said, don't go. You don't need that. You've had such a good trip. You feel really good. You don't need that energy. What you need to do is take Bardstown Road down to Irish Town and find somebody. And I thought, well, that's the weirdest thing, and I don't know what any of that means. But I didn't. I didn't go. I got in my car. I turned on the GPS. I found Bardstown Road. I drove all the way into downtown Louisville till I got to Irish Town and found an Irish shop. So I always like find the Irish gift shop in town because that's I'm Irish. And it turned out the woman who owned it, her mother-in-law worked at the American Standard factory with my grandmother, who died when my mom was 5, and she had all this information about what it was like to work there, how it was the first place to hire Irish women. I mean, all this stuff I never would have found out because that's what this thing told me to go do. So I did it. So I think it's one thing to get visited or to hear the voice, Rick, right? But then you have to listen to it and not do that human thing. My mama used to say humans were just smart enough to be dangerous, where we think, oh, I know everything, and I don't care what that thing told me. I'm going to stay under the car anyhow, you know?
Yeah. No, not after 2 times somebody telling me to let it go. First time I was just a bonehead,
yep.
You know. Second time, all right, I get it. I'm out. And, boy, if I hadn't got out exactly when I did, I think my poor guardian angel was holding up the front end going, will you hurry?
Yeah, exactly. So, exactly right. We're telling you to go. Please go.
Yeah,
go now.
You hurry.
Go
this
away.
Is heavy. So, yeah, it's and I have had actually intervention from the other side on more than one occasion. And the one time that happened, that saved my life. So I do know that there are safety nets around me.
Absolutely. Around all of us, right? And,
well, I don't know if everybody has it or not. I think you kind of got to earn those, you know. I think you can. I think you get, you know, protection from your loved ones. You know, most people will anyway. And,
right.
You know, I think the other stuff just comes to you in time of need.
Yeah. And it's about listening, right? I mean, spirit has so many messages for us, spirit and spirits, that we just don't listen to because we think, well, that's I know better than that. That's not the way it is. I mean, even when folks are living in haunted houses, right? I grew up in a horribly haunted house, very negative house. You know, and they won't leave. I always say my parents were just too stubborn to go. My father didn't believe, and my mother thought she could back it down. And it was like we could have left, you know, really fast, and we stayed there 5 years, and that was a lot. You know what I mean? You have to listen. You have to listen. And I think that's true in life with people and in your regular situations and your three-dimensional life, and it's true in your paranormal and spiritual life too. And you were talking earlier about different people's level of sensitivity, Rick. I mean, people talk about, like, the Amityville house, right? How could that have happened when the family that bought it afterwards said nothing happened? Well, a couple things. One thing, people sometimes lie because they don't want the trouble. Two, sometimes people just are in denial about it. And three, sometimes people just have no sensitivity. So one situation cannot bother one family. Another family, it's the house is a hell. The next family comes and, I don't feel anything. And if every once in a while a door slams or a window bursts open, whatever, it's probably the weather, and they just go on about their lives. I mean, you've probably seen a lot of that.
Yeah, I have. I actually saw one time I was chasing my brother. He was about 13 or 14 in that house in Texas. And he was just messing with me, and he goes, "Yeah, you always tell me about the ghost. Have the ghost get me," right? And he slapped me in the back of the head, and he started running, right? So I took off after him, and he ran around the kitchen table, the dining room table, and he was heading towards the kitchen. And you know how there's the extra chair on the wall for the dining room in case you have to pull it out for more people?
Sure.
It was about 2.5 feet from the doorway. And my brother goes running, and he looks back at me to say something, and I yell, "Get him, ghosts!" And right then, I was the only one who saw it. He was looking at me. My stepmother was in the other room, and she saw this chair fly in front of the, you know, on it, land on its side, and it wasn't from him running through there. We'd run through there together, chasing each other around 1,000 times, and that wasn't it. And the chair actually flew off the wall, landed on its side, tripped him, and he went face first into the kitchen, and slid across there right next to my stepmother, who was looking at him. And she had seen the chair fly before he had gotten to it. And, sometimes things happen that you just can't overlook. Let's put it that way. And you know what you were talking
Absolutely.
About earlier about feelings and listening? I've tried to tell people
yes.
before, ghost hunting is actually a basis of the way that we have developed over time. And, you know, through our evolution at one time, we were not only predator, but we were also prey. So we had this built-in, God-given thing that would, like, make your hair stand up and you'd say, "Oh, something's staring at me." And that was because that was a protection mechanism that we all had. Well, as we get more civilized, of course, lately it's hard to tell, as we get more civilized, people are not paying attention to that. And they got to get back to doing that, because that's something that was put in you for a reason.
Absolutely true. Yeah, right. I mean, when you're given gifts for a reason. And but it's hard, I think, because I think it's very scary for folks. I mean, I grew up, my mother was also gifted, so it didn't seem crazy to me, and I didn't think I was going to hell. But it is hard sometimes when you walk in a location and something starts following you around, talking to you, or you can feel other people's feelings, which sometimes aren't too pleasant. And you know what I mean? I think that I understand why people are in denial about everything. But like you said, with the chair story, right, you can't be in denial because the ghosts do believe in you, and eventually they'll show you something you can't deny.
Yeah, and I make it a point of letting them know if there's anything they want me to tell someone else, you know, just say it on the recorder. I'll make sure they get the message. If there's anything else I can do for them, just ask me and I'll give it a shot, you know. So instead of, you know, just being someone there who's trying to gain something for myself, it's always nice to know that I'm there to help them with something if I can.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. So do you consider yourself to be a sensitive person, a gifted person? Not like an emotionally sensitive person, because obviously you are, but I mean, do you consider yourself to have spiritual sensitivity?
Yeah. And it really depends on how you qualify that. I mean, I have been known to walk into the grocery store here and just automatically feel spirits inside the thing all the way across, you know, all the way across the building. And I can feel that they're over there. Sometimes I go in places I don't feel anything, but stuff still happens, you know. So it's, but yeah, I do feel things. And the one thing, touch on something you said earlier, I really pick up a lot on what's happening with other people's emotions, even when they're trying to hide them.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, there's sometimes I've gone home and almost started crying just because.
Sure, absolutely.
You know, it's just.
Yeah. So how did you survive, sweetheart, on movie sets? Because
I was okay.
Man, first of all, but there's energy, right? Especially if you're in a studio on a soundstage, the energy is a lot.
Yeah, but you know what? When you're on the stage, though, you know, when you're on a set and stuff, everybody's so focused on what they're doing that, you know, you're pretty much, especially if you're a stunt guy, you're either talking to the director or, you know, you're talking to the other stunt guys, or you might be talking to an actor. But generally, you're over by the craft service table sucking down the M&Ms, you know. So, yeah, each place, you know, has its own spot. The grips are over there. The director's over there. The production assistants are running back and forth, you know. So a lot of times, unless it's lunchtime or there's other people standing around you, it's pretty quiet sometimes. But other places, when you're out on location, that totally changes because everybody that's on location bonds together.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah,
have
when
you
can just leave
area?
The set and go home. When you're on location, it does. You become much better friends than you do if you're just, you know, going to a set. Because usually when you're going to a set and you're a stunt guy, you're there for 1 or 2 days at the most, you know.
Right.
So, but when you're on location, you're there with the people day after day after day. And you get to, I've gotten some really great friends off of movies.
That's beautiful. Yeah, me too. I mean, anything I've done, movies, television, plays, doing interviews with people. I mean, I think there's just an opportunity to make friends everywhere. And the thing that's nice about, for me, about having been involved in the paranormal community for so long, and the spiritual community and people now knowing that I'm a psychic, which for a lot of years in entertainment, I didn't talk about that, it kind of is a conversation starter. People have questions. They want to know about things. They ask spirit. And I like that because it's just more community building. So when you are on set, do people know that you're also the paranormal guy?
They do now. But before, you know, really hadn't said much about it. But about 15 years ago, after, you know, we were on Ghost Adventures. The two guys that ghost hunt with me a lot, one of them played Leatherface in Texas Chainsaw Massacre. The other one's my best friend, and he played Jason in the Friday the 13th. So as a group, we're pretty well known, and it's not because of me. It's because of them. I've played a lot of monsters. I've been in a lot of movies, but I didn't play an iconic character like they have. But which actually helps us get into some places, by the way.
I bet.
But lately
I bet.
Yeah, but you know what we get? Here's the flip side of that. I get a lot of phone calls from people and saying, you know, could you please come over to my house or my apartment? It is so haunted and blah, 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 blah. And I'll say, well, tell me what's going on.
Yeah.
And you can tell that they're kind of making stuff up as they go. And,
yes.
You know, I know exactly what's happening. So what I always say is say, all right, I'll tell you what, I'll come over, I'll bring one of my guys. It won't be like Kane or R.A., the guy, you know, the two famous guys. But we'll come over and check it out. If there's any real validity to it, and I'll see if those guys can come over the next time. And then you hear, well, let us get back to you. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
yeah, they just want your friends to visit. That's you know what? I get that all the time. I mean, I'm sorry?
No, that's exactly it.
Yeah, and I get it too. You know what? I have I have many different friends that were on many different TV movie kind of things, and I get a lot of that as well, where people say, "Oh, hey, I was just thinking about you. I'm having this thing on Friday, and I'd love for you to come and be a part of it." Oh, and you know what? Could you bring this other person? And it's like, wow, really? Like, you didn't, do you know what I mean? I mean, but that's just entertainment, right? Everybody wants something. Everybody's, not everybody, but there is a certain faction of people in entertainment that are just looking to get whatever it is they want from whatever they can. And I think that that is not exclusive to entertainment. It's a personality type that people across the globe have. It's the person that takes 27 selfies of themselves and puts them on Facebook every day. And those are the people that think, like, how can I get a famous person to my house? Oh, I know. I can pretend it's haunted. So, yeah, I know.
Well, I'll tell you a funny story. We were doing a convention, and I think it was Minnesota. Might have been in Michigan. And there was the three of us up on the stage. And they said, Rick, you're a stuntman and a ghost hunter. That's really unusual. And I pointed at Kane. I said, well, there's another one right there. Right?
Yeah.
But yeah. It's some of the stuff is so strange to me, you know.
Yeah.
But it's just. Well,
yeah.
It's
weirder than the ghosts, right? The ghosts are the least bizarre thing.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I had the girl that had asked me that question. She goes, it must be so much fun doing that. And I said, all right, well, let me just tell you what happened to me a couple days ago. I said, I was playing golf, and one of the guys I was playing golf with was the guy who played the giant lizard, the Gorn, in Star Trek, the TV show. And they went, oh, because this is all horror and sci-fi fans, and they're all clapping. And I said, and when I got to the 18th green, I said, there was another guy I know who had played Michael Myers. And they, oh, wow. And I said, I get out to my car, and my phone's ringing. I answered, and I said, it's R.A., and I pointed R.A., played Leatherface. And they're all, yay! And I said, I got home, my phone was ringing, I ran upstairs and answered, and it was Kane, Jason Voorhees, right? And they're all cheering, and I said, that sounds really good, doesn't it? And they're like, yeah, and I said, except for one thing. All I got is, like, giant lizards and serial killers. Where's Barbie, Heather, Bambi?
right, exactly. Yeah, you got all the bad boys of horror as in your investigation team.
Yeah, but it's like, come on. It's,
and did you put that group together? I mean, you're all know each other from the business, and then one day you just started talking about the paranormal and realized they were into it too?
Well, no. It actually kind of came about probably about 15 years ago, I guess. Maybe not that long ago, 10 or 12 maybe. We were doing a movie at Mansfield Prison. And I had been ghost hunting, and I never told anybody about it. Because back then it wasn't quite as trendy as it is now. But I wasn't ashamed of it.
Yeah.
Just nobody wanted to talk about it, right? Well, we got done. Me and Kane got done. And as we're walking from way back in the cell blocks, everybody's gone. It's like 2 in the morning, and it's as creepy looking as it could be. And he says, hey, why don't we ghost hunt? And, you know, like my alarm bells, what? You want to ghost hunt? This is cool. So we're ghost hunting there, and we saw a shadow down at the other end, and Kane goes, you know, zooming off after it. And I thought, you know what? I've always wanted to start a group, but everybody I ghost hunted with went backwards. This guy went forward. This is the guy I got to start the group with. So Kane and I started the group together. And as R.A. likes to say, he said, well, they needed a pretty face, so they asked him. And then we always say, yeah, we did need a pretty face. We did need a pretty face, so we asked other people. So, but that's how it got started. And then when people really started to notice was after we were on Ghost Adventures.
Awesome. And is it just the three of you, or are there more?
Oh, there's about 12 of us, but, you know, once you get to a certain age and you're in a certain kind of business where you have very little time, it ends up being more that we would ghost hunt when we were on location, find something close by. Kane and I would go ghost hunt, you know, like when we were in Mansfield or we were in New Orleans, you know, things like that. Me and Ari and Kane were in New Orleans. We went ghost hunting, things like that. But mostly what I'm doing now is working with Dark Zone TV and Spirit Realm Network and doing live stream ghost hunts from different really haunted places. And I've also go for a month every year, however not the last year, to Scotland and ghost hunt up there because I'm a member of Scottish Paranormal. And, you know, we go all over the place, and that, those guys are as good as it gets. So most of my stuff is done not with the Hollywood ghost hunters right now because R.A., myself, and Kane live in three different states. You know, so it's a little harder to do things than when we all used to live in this same neighborhood.
Yeah, sure. Sure,
so,
yeah, it is hard, right? Did you all used to live in L.A. and they moved?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. A lot of folks retire outside of L.A., isn't that interesting?
Well, neither one of them guys are retired, but yeah, well, I can see why a lot of people would want to leave California.
Retire from the hustle. I don't mean retire from the work, but hustle of being here.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. But, you know,
yeah.
I've tried to explain this to people about why the movie business is so filled with people that are so filled with themselves. And it's not necessarily that they really are that way, but the fact is if you're trying to get any kind of job in the movie business, you have to sell yourself every single time you meet somebody.
Yes.
And, you get used to talking about yourself. Well, I did this, I did that, I did this, I did that, you know. I've done, right now, I figured out the other day, about 83 projects between movie, TV, web series, and live ghost hunts that were on TV.
Hmm.
So, but I don't really talk about that. I mean, I do if somebody asks me, but
right.
It's just, you know, it's part of my life. But actually, right now, the paranormal is much more. And actually, the book really helped because I've been getting a lot more people asking me to do things after they've read the book.
Oh, I bet. Absolutely. Yeah, and the book is great, right? Everybody should have a book. I say as I don't have a book done yet. Because suddenly
but you do have
to take on any show.
But I will say, though, you have my book because I gave you one.
I do. So I do have a book, just not my own, but I do have yours, and it's wonderful. But it's a wonderful thing, right? You can take it on any show. You can do anything with it. I mean, it's everybody wants to interview somebody, and the book gives them a reason to do it. So
well,
I think it's wonderful. Now,
I was on a radio show, and the guy says to me, he goes, congratulations on your book. Now, that's what they always say to you when you write a book, right?
Sure.
I said, oh,
yes.
Well, thank you. And he goes, no, you won. That's quite an award you won. And I went, what? I didn't know anything about it. And he goes, no, you won the Paranormal Awards Book of the Year. And I went, send me the link. I thought he was putting me on, and sure enough.
Yep.
You think somebody would have told me, though, wouldn't you? Sent me a certificate
well,
or something
think,
to put on the wall, you know?
I think that just shows how not into yourself you are in that way, because I think there are some people who would be doing a Google search for themselves every day looking to see what new thing comes up. You know,
well,
you strike
yeah,
me as somebody who's too busy in the projects, too busy working
you know,
to spend time Googling yourself.
I'm afraid to Google myself. I might find out I passed away last week, so I'm not doing that.
that's probably good. Yeah, that's fantastic. when did you start doing conventions, and how do you feel about that?
I love doing conventions because I love people. I mean, you met me out at the desert. I love telling stories.
Yeah.
I love talking to people. I mean, you know, I live alone. I don't have a girlfriend. I don't have a boyfriend. I don't have a dog. You know, I live alone. I don't have any kids. So when I get to go outside, you know, I'm kind of an annoying pest. You know, I'm like fungus. I try to wear
sure,
you down
absolutely.
And you're my friend, you know.
Yeah, right. No, I don't believe that. But, yeah, I get it. Yeah. I mean, I think that it's – how often do you get an opportunity now to investigate, and how has COVID changed that?
COVID changed it quite a bit because I would have been for a month already in Scotland right now.
Oh,
so that
no.
changed.
Yeah,
and,
that's
and
not good.
and I missed out on last year. So I've missed out on two straight years. As a matter of fact, Mysterious Adventures, I think it's called, by the way, if you go to ghostbelieveinme.com, you'll see about the book. You'll see about this tour I'm talking about. I'm supposed to lead a tour for 9 days ghost hunting around Scotland next July. And I've gotten the guys from Scottish Paranormal to help us get some really cool locations and the local flavor of everything. So that should be a lot of fun. I'm really looking forward to it. I really miss Scotland.
Yeah, I can't wait. I've never been. I've never been to Ireland because I'm scared if I go, I'll never come home.
Well, you know, I always had a burning desire to go to Scotland. And it was always because I thought McCullum was Irish, and it's not. It's Scottish.
Yeah.
And the McCullum and the Malcolm name in Scotland are exactly the same family. Half of them changes to be more Scottish sounding. And so if there's anything like a Malcolm in the history books, it's my family. If you see McCullum, it's still my family.
Right. Well, is Malcolm your mother's name?
No, that was my dad's name. Dad's family.
Oh, his first name? Okay.
No, that was the family name, Malcolm.
Gotcha. And then also McCullum. Yeah, that's interesting.
Well, actually, what's really funny, I would have paid more attention to things in high school because I heard that Malcolm was the one who killed Macbeth.
Oh, there you go. Mm-hmm.
Or one of them rascals in Macbeth.
Yep.
You know, not sure which one it was.
Right? Right. One of those Scottish men and killed Macbeth. That's fantastic. Well, you know, and I say I'm Irish, and I am, but I'm Northern Irish, so my family's Ulster. And so you can't be Ulster without a Scot or two getting in the woodpile. And I always laugh because my great-grandmother was 4'9", and my great-grandfather was 6'7". And that's a lot for a guy that was born in the mid-1800s.
That's huge.
So I always say with that height. And so, right, and so my mother had four sisters, and three of them were wee like her. We're like 5'4", and the other two were almost 6 foot. And I'm tall. I'm 5'9". So I always laugh that that's the Scott gene because no Irishman ever was 6'7".
Yeah, that is true. By the way, I did go to Leap Castle and to Hellfire Club in Ireland, and there is a major, major difference between being in Northern Ireland and in Southern Ireland.
Sure, yes.
I mean, it's completely different places.
And I can't wait to visit both. My friend, we are totally out of time. You're amazing. Let's do this again soon. And where can people find you online again?
Well, they can find me at Rick McCullum on Facebook. They can find me at ghostbelieveinme.com. They can find us at Hollywood Ghost Hunters on Facebook. So any of those, and you'll bump into little old me.
Wonderful. Thank you for being here, my friend. I appreciate you. I had a blast, and I hope you enjoyed yourself as much as I did.
Oh, I certainly did, and I thank you very much for inviting me.
Thank you. Thank you for being here, and thank you for being so wonderful, and thanks for being a part of this. And let's do it again soon because I know you have a lot more wonderful stories to share, and I'm excited to hear each and every one of them. Everybody, the wonderful Rick McCullum, such a thrill to have him here on the show, such a great guy. And such a great addition to the show today. Thank you, my friend. I'm at SheenaMetalSpiritual.com for all your spiritual needs. We're at HauntedPlayground.com. We're in the Live Paranormal Network. I'll be back next Wednesday at 6 o'clock Pacific Time. And remember my Raising the Vibration show Tuesday at 5 o'clock Pacific Time here. And tonight I'll be live on Live Paranormal Video Network, Facebook.com/TheLiveParanormal, doing Haunted Playground After Dark, 9 o'clock Pacific Time. Seek peace, my friends. Live in love. Lead with kindness. Embrace unity. Raise your vibration. And I'll see you next week. I love you all.